최고.
Welcome to Connectivity 187. I'm your host, Nicholas Bray, and today I'm joined by Neil Ronahan.
Hello!
Becky Hollider.
Hi!
And Adam Abu Nasser.
Hi, guys.
So, before we jump into our main topics today, which we have two, one being playing games with siblings and or significant others, and another segment on our history with gaming magazines. But first, we wanted to jump into a little bit of what's everyone been up to, and also, today, Pikmin 4 was sort of dropped on us.
Sort of announced, like, it's such a weird, like, I kind of read that with, like, this just, like, big eyebrow raise being like, really? This is how it's going down? Because I guess, like, what was it, back in July or something, I guess Miyamoto and Tezuka were, like, going through Europe. In support of Mario Maker, and somehow I guess the guys at Eurogamer got them to be like, yeah, Pikmin 4 is in development, it's almost done, and then Nintendo confirmed that, which is just like this weird, like, you'd think, like, alright, like, I would imagine that Eurogamer's piece was, like, embargoed until today. You'd think that, like, Nintendo would want to get in front of that, maybe, but, like, they didn't. It's just so weird.
It's so weird that they didn't even mention this at E3 even.
No. Yeah. Like, you think, I feel it, like that's kind of a bigger deal than just dropping it in.
Well, I can tell you why they didn't mention it at E3, and that's because it's not gonna be out before next E3.
True.
And, like, I mean, we can make jokes that, like, oh, Federation Force is gonna get delayed until 2017 or whatever, but, like, really everything that they showed at E3 this year on paper as of E3 would be out way before next E3. Like, I think probably the most questionable thing that they showed was, like, Shin Megami Tensei Cross Fire Emblem, which is
that'll
be out
debate.
In Japan this year. It's just not going to be out in America until probably, I mean, I would think later next year at the earliest. But It's still weird.
It is weird, like, you know, because we're assuming that it's going to be on for the Wii U. And there's no problem with having more Wii U games, but it's just, to me, it's kind of weird that they would throw development resources towards another Pikmin game.
It's a pet project of Miyamoto. Like, I mean, that's why Pikmin 3 even exists. And part of it's also, they have the engine done. And I saw people, I got into some talks with people on the internet about it, and people were like, oh, how come they're not using these developers to, like, make a new F-Zero or a Metroid game? And that's because that would require, like, more unique assets. Like, with this, like, you have an HD Pikmin game, like, the base is there, you just expand on it or iterate on it, and then you have a new game. Whereas, like, an F-Zero, like, even if you took the Mario Kart 8 engine, you'd still have to do a lot of work to make that game an F-Zero game.
Yeah.
Now, with this, they were working on Pikmin 3 DLC for a while, but it kind of just stopped. Do you think they got kind of overexcited and just kind of turned what they were working on into Pikmin 4?
That could be it. Although, I don't think the DLC ever just stopped. I mean, I think they had a plan for it, and it was like 6 months after launch, and then it ended. It's the same thing with Mario Kart. Like,
yeah, it seemed like they were going to do a whole lot more with it.
There was a plan for the DLC. Yeah. I think the one thing that sucked about the DLC is that all it was were, like, the mission modes, and I would have loved to have, like, some story mode DLC with that game, but I just don't think that was ever in the cards. But yeah. Pikmin 4.
They also mentioned, like, some Galaxy stuff too, right? Sort of.
I think that we, you know what? hold on, give me, talk amongst yourselves.
It was more alluding to like
something how they're still thinking, the next system.
Thinking about how to do it and that sort of thing.
Yeah, that was just so vague. They didn't give us anything
okay,
on that.
Here's a quote. Here's a quote from our article on the website that by the time you hear this podcast, it will be at least 2 weeks old. from Miyamoto on a new Super Mario Galaxy game. On the other hand, me and Yoshiaki Koizumi, or Koizumi-san, as he's referred to in this, he's the director of Galaxy, they're always looking to challenge Galaxy and do another 3D action title. However, we can't make so many games at once in parallel, but as the hardware technology gets better and advances, I think there will be a lot of opportunity for both options. So I think that's basically saying, like, we're working on it. Like, we'll probably have a 3D Mario, another big 3D Mario at some point.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's going to happen at some point.
Yeah. It's just a matter of when.
Yep. And I think that it'd be smart to try to have that for launch of the NX.
Right?
Yeah.
That would be kind of a strong launch title and, you know, strong first party that everybody would be looking forward to since it's been a while since Galaxy 2.
You know, as long as it's like a 3D Mario game that's ambitious, people would like lap it up. Because, like, you know, a bit of the throwback towards New Super Mario Bros. Wii U was that it was just, you know, it's a Mario game, but it's not that exciting overall sort of thing.
Yeah, but it probably, even with the lackluster sales of the Wii U, it probably sold better than 3D World or a potential Galaxy 3 would sell on the Wii U.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, it's a shame that Mario Maker wasn't the Wii U's launch title.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would It is one of those things where it's like Mario Maker is almost too little, too late. Like,
yeah.
if it came out earlier, it could have made more of a difference. And I know that people still kind of hold that hope out that like Mario Maker is going to come out and then the Wii U's are going to fly off the shelves. But that's just not realistic anymore. There might be a sizable bump when we find out the sales in September for systems across the world. But it's not going to be anything to be like, now the Wii U overtook the PS4. Oh.
Yeah,
like,
heck
that's,
no.
That's
oh,
not happening. That ship sailed pretty much the month the PS4 launched.
Exactly.
I just hope that Mario Maker doesn't die when the NX comes out, that it like is on the NX or something.
I mean, we can talk about my review of the game. That's up on Nintendo World Report, and by the time you hear this, it'll be old news, and everybody will be playing the game. But one of my big complaints with it is that I kind of can't wait for Mario Maker 2. So, like, there's a lot of little things that kind of add up that are, like, missing from that game. Like, you can't make slopes. There are no secret exits, no checkpoints. There's a lot of enemies that I feel are kind of missing, like, no kind of star coin-like things that you can put in levels. And I would love to see that get... I would love to see Mario Maker as a concept get iterated on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, I mean, of course, like, a Zelda Maker or a 3D Mario Maker, like, that stuff would be incredible. Probably also way harder to do. But, like, having that Maker style of games continue would be awesome.
I could see a 2D Zelda Maker eventually, maybe. But a 3D Mario one, there's so many more variables to account for in a 3D game design. I mean, even making it easy to use, like Mario Maker does a lot of things right just by making the interface so easy for people to just jump in and place blocks and stuff.
I feel like the next game, as far as like a Zelda Maker, the next game that I think that people should start like getting in Miyamoto's face in interviews and be like, hey, you played this, like everyone was with Minecraft, is The Binding of Isaac. Because even though I'm not personally that hot on that game, I tried playing it, it's just the roguelike nature of that game didn't really grab me. But that game is basically like, it's like a twin stick 2D Zelda in a way, and I think there's a lot of ideas with that could be brought to some kind of randomly generated Zelda, or possibly a Zelda where you make your own items or something.
Okay, so after that little bit of news, or old news by the time this goes out, Neil, what did you get up to on the weekend or just recently?
Well, right before this, I was playing some Mario Maker as I'm getting recording some video for the final stretch before the embargo goes up. I think the one thing that I've kind of come to terms with Mario Maker right now is that we reviewers are pretty terrible at making levels. Because, like, there's every now and then, like, there's a few guys that are doing the Lord's work in making Mario levels right now. But then I'll just go through some of them where I'm like, what are you doing, man? But I also feel like that might not be entirely game reviewers' faults. I think that's just what's going to happen in Mario Maker in general, and the reality of how many terrible levels are going to be made kind of, like, harshes my buzz.
Not everyone can be a game designer.
Yeah, and I mean, it's true, and it's going to be, like, it's been a humbling experience for me, and probably everyone that's like, I got all these ideas, you're going to sit down and try to do them and be like, oh man, this is really hard. But, it, like, it's kind of, as someone kind of looking forward to play games, like, I just don't know how well that's going to work, in a way.
But,
yeah. But aside from Mario Maker, I've been playing Disney Infinity 3.0, which is very fun. It's made a great first impression on me. I haven't even gotten to playing the Star Wars specific stuff. Have any of the three of you played Disney Infinity in the past?
I bought it earlier this year, the 2.0 one, but I think I mentioned on the live stream, I haven't really played much of it, and I found, like, just turning it on kind of overwhelming and confusing.
That's still very much there in the third one, but what the third one kind of does better is that, like, so when it starts up and you're in the toy box, it kind of, it places you in, the, like, a hub world. As before, like, in the past, it's like, it puts you in, like, oh, you can make your own thing around this, but this is, like, a defined, like, this is the hub world. And there's, like, a place in the middle that you can go to, and then you can go start building your own toy boxes if you want to.
Yeah, that was but one of the big deals. World,
yeah.
Yeah, that was one of the big deals about the new one.
Yeah, there's a bunch of, like, spokes there. And in this, like, there's that center area, and then outside of that, like, there's different areas. Like, one of them, like, there's the concept of sidekicks in this game, where, like, you can kind of, like, train up, like, a little buddy to help you fight things. Then there's one that's more focused on the vehicle usage. There's one that's more focused on, like, the online and, like, what other people are making in the toy box. There's one that's focused on, like, jumping around and maneuverability. And in each of these areas, there's kind of, like, a little, like, playground to mess around. And then there's also challenges that you can go through. And I found, like, I put in the game and spent, like, 2 or 3 hours just messing around and all of those things. And there's still a limit to what's there. And I was getting pretty close to hitting upon that limit in, like, 3 hours. But then you can go online and download more toy boxes. It's easier for people to create their own things in this game. Although, coming off of Mario Maker, it's kind of crazy to see how inelegant the Disney Infinity creator is compared to Mario Maker, but also how much bigger that creator is. Like, with Disney Infinity, like, it's a, you know, a 3D game, but you can make it like a Diablo style game or a side scroller, and that's really cool. And the other thing that I've been checking out with Disney Infinity is the Toy Box Takeover game, which I think they introduced this last year, where in addition to, like, the playsets for the specific like the Star Wars and the Marvel and the Inside Out and everything, they also have these other discs that then you put on the portal. And then they unlock these kind of side modes that anyone can play in. And Toy Box Takeover is just, it brings back villains from other games. Like, I think Syndrome is, like, the big villain from The Incredibles. I fought against Barbossa from Pirates of the Caribbean. And it's just, like, Diablo-style levels that you go through with any character that you want. And I'm having fun with it. It definitely feels way better than the previous ones. And I'm excited to dive into the Star Wars stuff.
Yeah, the Star Wars stuff's the big draw here, really.
And other than that, I've been playing LBX, but I think, Adam, I think you've been playing a lot of LBX, haven't you?
I'm obsessed with LBX.
All right, then I will leave that for you, sir.
Okay.
We may as well just jump straight over to Adam, then. So, Adam, how's LBX?
I have a soft spot in my heart for, like, awful children's anime stories about friendship and technology. This game was made for me. Like, I loved all I know about Mega Man comes from Mega Man Battle Network and Mega Man Star Force, and I will admit that those games had terrible stories, but, like, the combat was kind of fun, but I loved them. And LBX is about this little boy whose mom won't let him have a murdering toy robot because they're too dangerous. But it turns out that, like, your dad invented them, And then he disappeared in a plane crash. He didn't die. He disappeared in a plane crash. And then, like, 10 years later, some weird lady shows up and gives you a super special LBX that's going to save the world. And then you have a little robot, like, and you can go...
It's got the stupidest conceit for anything. Because it's just, like, they launched this toy, these toy robots, and then they, like, had to shut it down because it was too violent. And they're like, guys, don't worry. We got fortified cardboard. Everything's fine. Oh, yeah. The which is just like cardboard. So basically it's like you have like a Pokeball in your pocket and you throw it out and just like a little box pops out and it's like, all right, our guys are gonna fight there. But then like in the there's like an once the weird lady gives you the briefcase, then like there's of course like these weird people that might be in blackface, I'm not sure. The three of them, they're all wearing suits, and then they go to your house, and instead of like these are three adults trying to like accost a child and get his toy robot from him, instead of like just using their own force as human beings, they send in their three little robots to like fire at this person who is, I don't know, 50 times as big as these little robots. And instead of like the boy being like, I don't know, I'm just gonna step on these things, he's like, all right, I'll send in my robot to fight. Like, it's just like the dumbest conceit in the world. But I guess Pokemon's the same way, so it's okay. Game's really fun. Go on, Adam.
Yeah, Yu-Gi-Oh! Is even worse with that, and I loved Yu-Gi-Oh! They would play cards instead of actually just fighting
each other. I'm gonna punch you in the face! Alright, I got a three, and now I got a pair. Like,
but I just love how confusingly the story escalates. Like, the opening cinematic is the little boy, like, in space fighting giant robots or something. And then he's like, oh, I remember that one day. And then it goes to him, like, at the World Championships. And then he goes, I remember that one day. And then you take control of your character. And it's, like, two flashbacks later. And the first thing you do is you fight the school bully behind the gym. And then the second thing you do is you stop an assassination on the prime minister.
Yeah.
It's just...
Like, that's chapter one, chapter two. Like,
what?
There's no ramp up. It's just from, like, 0 to 100.
I guess there's, like, 15 chapters, so I guess it ends in space. That's what the opening alludes to. But the actual battle is pretty fun. When I was, like, 10 hours in, it got kind of stale. And then I changed my weapon, and I was like, oh, wait a second. This weapon plays completely differently. So that kind of changed it up. And I've only it really has used almost, a couple weapons.
It has almost like a light Monster Hunter element to it, in that like how much each weapon kind of feels different. Like, it's definitely not as deep as Monster Hunter, but like the idea of kind of customizing your robot however you want to suit your playstyle, like I'm getting very, very strong Monster Hunter vibes with that element of it. And I get super overwhelmed with all the different parts that you can put on your robot. But I do love the way that the combat kind of feels, and the ability to like switch other characters on the fly when you're in battle, and the customization after you kind of wrap your head around it. It's pretty simple to tweak everything.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, and I've actually played multiplayer. The day it came out, I bought two copies. I bought one for me and one for my best friend, and I call him every day and I tell him that he has to play it so that we can battle. And he's still pretty early in the game, but yesterday I went over to his house and he was like, oh, since you're so much stronger, can I bring my teammates? And I was like, sure. And then he just destroyed me, and I was super upset because I was like 10 hours deeper into the game than he was. He was like, oh, I have to go fight the school bully. And I was like, psh, I did that like a week ago. But it worked pretty well. I mean, there were just two of us and we sat right next to each other. But it was fun.
I really wish it was online.
Yeah, I wish it was online, but I feel like I would just get destroyed if I went online.
Yeah. Like, I mean, like, because I played it at a preview event. I played some of the multiplayer, and I really enjoyed it. And I was there with, our own Justin Berube, and we were playing each other. And we asked the rep, being like, we could play this online, right? And he's just like, no. And we're like, our hearts sank.
Aww.
But it's really fun. I think I might be... Like, what chapter are you on, Adam?
I think I'm at, like, the end of five or something.
Okay, I think you're... I'm at the end of four. Like, I'm at, like, the catacombs contest.
Oh, that bullshit. Oh, my God.
Oh, God. No, damn it.
Can I tell you a little bit about that? Do you mind if I just spoil it for you? Okay, so you have three matches, and you win all three of them by, like, a technicality.
Yeah.
Just one after the other. It's such bullshit. Like, you're winning your match, and then it goes to a cutscene where you're losing, and then there's a technicality. And it's like, I guess that's probably how there's the actual anime goes.
There's a lot of, like, deus ex machina in this game in general. It's just like, all right, you're getting beat, but, like, don't worry, someone just saved you from death. Like,
yeah,
there's tons wonderful. Of that.
It's friendship always saves the day.
Yep. But it is, it's a slow burn, but I have been enjoying it a lot.
Okay, so Becky, what have you been up to?
Kim and I have been jumping back on our YouTube videos for
yes.
NWR.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did one of the NX that we just put up, like last Friday, really early, because we ended up like filming it, and then something went wrong. I can't even remember what it was now, and we couldn't put it up to like the Friday before last, like we wanted to. So we're going to end up having to put two out in a row, because we're putting out another one this Friday for Mario Maker, about all kinds of little Easter eggs and stuff that you can find in the game. Just little clever things to look for that we're excited about. But yeah, we were just kind of like, crap, it's been a while since we've done a video. We went through our blooper reels and our dancing videos from E3. We got to come up with something. So we were like, yeah, I think we've gotten the most comments on our NX video ever of people basically telling us we're stupid and apparently didn't research any of our information, except we did.
The best way to get to get comments
I
is
know,
to,
we're just kind of like, well,
say bad things or
I think
misreport
in,
things.
In the douchebags of the internet's defense, I did kind of enjoy it, where you're basically just like, and the NX is coming out next year, like it was fact.
I know, that was like...
I did kind of enjoy that, like, I think it was like, they could have used a little bit of, like, pulling it back, but I still really, really
yeah,
enjoyed
no,
it.
Yeah, no, we kind of, we did end up posting that on, like, one of the things, like, yeah, we probably should have actually said that as maybe instead, but, like, then the rest of the video was, like, maybe this, probably that, well, somebody said this, so this might be true. It was like, oh, crap, the one sentence we didn't put that on.
it's like hard to talk about the NX right now because so much of it is unconfirmed and speculation and rumors.
Most of it, like 90% of it, is nothing but speculation. I mean, it's like somebody said, well, I heard a little bit of this somewhere, so we think this is going to be true. And it's like, well, we can try and put something like that in there.
Yeah.
But yeah.
You're in that dangerous spot with NX2 where like popular rumors become fact.
Yeah,
like the whole, like there's really been nothing to support the whole concept of like, oh, there's going to be a handheld and a home version of the NX. Like that's been like people extrapolating some of the stuff that like, you know, Iwata and Nintendo said in the past, but like it's still like it's us extrapolating kind of what we want and putting that into Nintendo's words.
And based
it's
off
fun.
Of
it's
you know,
all
the
it's all the said. All in the name of fun speculation.
Yeah, we were just kind of like, well, at least, you know, we got people talking about it, even if they think we're, you know, even if they hate us, apparently. But yeah, I mean, it was just kind of like, we were like, yeah, you know, some of the things could have been clarified a little bit better, but there was obviously some information that was, like, definitely presented through some other publications as a lot more supported than it was, apparently. So we were just like, oh, well, you know, there is that, too. But yeah, we did try
I,
and like
I very much
be
enjoyed
like,
it.
Yeah, I told her I was like, okay, next time we do a speculation video, let's put speculation and rumors in the title. So you know, people were just like, none of this is all baseless, you know, speculation, and we're like, yeah, that's why we said probably. And I mean, some of the things were definitely worded improperly, but there was some stuff that we outright said was not necessarily a fact. You know, that was just kind of like, oh, well, if this was true, maybe this will be a thing. You know, the whole thing about the skeleton crews working on some of the games that came out from E3 and second party companies working on them so that they may obviously be gearing up for the NX. And you know, like, the whole thing, people were just like, yeah, Zelda's not coming out for the NX. We're like, well, you know, if it did come out in 2016 and they pushed it out 2015, wouldn't that be a great NX launch title? And they're all like,
yep.
Well, yeah, there's no, but there's no, you know, fact behind it. We're like, I know, but isn't it fun to think about? Like, that was the point, not to say that this was actually coming.
It's all speculation.
But, you
know. It's all fun.
Exactly, especially because it would be like, well, this would be the best idea for Nintendo, would be to release something strong like a 3D Mario or Zelda for the NX. You know, if you want to come out of the shadow of the Wii U's poor sales, what better way to do it than, you know, take this Zelda title that everybody's already looking forward to and, you know, either, you know, do it as an opening title and a swan song for the Wii U, like they did with Twilight Princess, or, you know, strictly put it on the NX and just kind of push it back a little bit more and work with all of the new technology that you've got, but, or that you might have. But yeah, that was an interesting video, but this week's is probably going to be a little bit more tame as far as how much people hate it. Just because it's a lot of information that's already been kind of out about Mario Maker, like some of the changes in sprites that they've done, like the Super Mario World change in sprite for Bowser.
Yeah.
Which so
I like the way he originally looked in Mario World.
I don't know. I think he looked so weird. And I was just like, I was looking at the new sprite and I'm just kind of like, although looking at this, it really almost doesn't fit as well as the old version, even if the old version is weird. But yeah, it's the new video's all that kind of stuff. And we're hopefully doing some more like game focused stuff with some of the new stuff that's coming out by the end of the year. Since I'll be reviewing Yoshi's Woolly World hopefully soonish, we might do some kind of...
Who knows when we'll get that. I mean, if you were in Europe, we'd all be playing it already.
I know!
I own it. I haven't
played it yet. I know, and I'm just like...
I know, it's like, it comes out here, and all the Americans are like, oh, you really want to play it? And I'm just like, yeah, I'll get to that.
I'm just kind of like, can I get somebody to just, like, buy me Yarn Yoshi before it comes out so that I can play it with the Yarn Yoshi amiibo as part of my review? Is that a thing? Can they send me one of those?
I could send you one if you want.
Send it to me!
We'll talk later if you really want one.
Yeah. I really do. I might have to get Kim in on this too, because her and I have been just discussing, like, so which color do you want?
Like, the answer is all three.
Exactly. It's really
hard to decide. I don't
know if I'll
wind up with all three.
Yeah.
It's like that kind of that thing where I'm like, I only need one, but like, I don't know, they're adorable.
They're so cute. And it's just like, I mean, as awesome as Epic Yarn was for Kirby, it didn't come with Yarn Amiibo. That's all there is to it, so.
Okay, so I haven't really been doing too much stuff. I was actually going to try and like watch the Blu-ray of the Super Mario Brothers movie for this episode.
That came out on Blu-ray?
It came out on Blu-ray?
In Europe it did, yeah. It came out last year. Aww. And I've had it for ages, and I just haven't.
It's right next to your copy of Woolly World.
It is, yeah. I'm gonna do a double feature on that, because yeah, Yoshi was really, really woolly in the movie, with all these scales. But the Blu-ray, just a little bit of information on the Blu-ray. The Blu-ray apparently it's got a really good new transfer for Blu-ray. And there was actually I think an hour long documentary from and goes into, you know, they get people like the directors of the film and that to talk about it. So I do want to get to that eventually and sort of have a chat about that, because it sounds pretty interesting. Like the whole package of that Blu-ray is really good. So if you got a region free Blu-ray player in America, it's probably, you know, not a bad idea to import it.
Yeah, because I would like to know what went through their heads, just, you know, watching that movie during my childhood, just going, what?
I didn't even really watch it until the early 2000s. So, you know, it's a weird movie. It's a really bad Mario movie, but I don't know. I don't know if it's
There's actually a campy, bad movie.
It is, yeah. There is, yeah. You know,
I go back to, like, this thought I had is, like, if Mario never existed, but that movie still, like, had come out, would people be more like fondly remember it?
Kind of almost like the Ninja Turtles 2 movie with Vanilla Ice in it. You're like, you know,
can't be fun. If you didn't have anything to compare it to, it's like, this is an adaptation of a video game franchise. Like, if it's just a movie, people probably would be a little less down on it, maybe.
Maybe.
It's just a goofy movie. It's weird that it has the Mario name on it, but it's just one of those, like, stupid, silly movies.
Okay, so we're going to take a short break, and we'll be back with our first topic for this episode, gaming with siblings and or significant others. Welcome back. Now we're going to jump into our first topic, even though our intro went a bit longer than expected, and that is gaming with siblings and or significant others. So where do we want to start on this? Who wants to jump in first and talk about their brother or sister or whatever from back in the day or even recently?
Oh, I do.
Go ahead. Okay.
All right, so I'm the second of four kids. The oldest and the youngest are 5 years apart, so we were all, like, really close in age. And my brother and I, when I was, like, 3 or 4, got a Super Nintendo, and that was for our room, and we played through, like, the Donkey Kong Country games together. We played a lot of, like, Ninja Turtles, just, you know, the Super Nintendo multiplayer stuff. But then all four of us together saved up and bought a Nintendo 64 a little bit after... it came out, and that's probably where I remember playing games together the most. For some reason, I have really strong memories of playing that really awful Rugrats Mario Party game, even though we only...
Was that the one based on the movie?
Oh my god.
I think it had, like, some movie stuff in it. It was terrible, and we only rented it for one day.
Was it like Rugrats World Party or something like that? I think there might have been two Rugrats games.
Mario Party ripoff.
But my sister actually found it used a couple years ago, so we all got together, I think it was Thanksgiving, and played that game again, and somehow, I remember it being terrible.
Rugrats Scavenger Hunt.
Yes! Somehow it was worse than we remembered, and we were all, like, begging each other to quit, but no one wanted to be the one to quit. But I remember playing that game. We did a lot of Mario Party, and it really, really added to the experience having, like, three other people really close to your age to be able to play Mario Party and Mario Kart with. So that was a lot of fun. I still game with them. My brother, when he's in town, will play, like, 3D World. He loves that game. And then he and his friends are really into Smash, so we'll get together and play Smash. And they're pretty good, but I can usually beat them, and they get really mad and make me, like, change my character and stuff. And then my sisters and I, we love Animal Crossing. And we have this really weird yearly tradition that started when we were too young to know any better, where we go and buy the, I think it's called, like, the festive candle around Christmas time and celebrate Kwanzaa. In our Animal Crossing village, every year we buy each other gifts, and it's, like, super wholesome, but it's just a weird thing that my sisters and I do every year. But I live with one of my sisters, the closest one to me in age, and I try and get her to play. We played Fordable Space Adventure together, and that was awesome because it started off really easy. And then it got really hard, and she was just freaking out the whole time. Like, what do we do? What do we do? What do we do? And, we had to work together.
I played Affordable Space Adventures, with two of my friends, a bulk of it. except for I made the mistake of getting really drunk.
Oh, no.
So I, like, because when you do it with three players, for people who are familiar with that and haven't played it three players, you have, like, one person with a gamepad, and they do all, like, the controls and stuff, and then there's another person that just controls the ship, and the third person will control, like, the light. They're the science officer. So that's what I was, but what you could do with that is if you hit the buttons in such a combination, then, like, you just have, like, a strobe light go off. So during any situation, as I got trollier and trollier, whenever there would be any situation where it's like, all right, we got to be really quiet, I would just turn that off and then watch as we got harmlessly blown away. but I, that's a really fun game with friends and siblings and anybody.
Yeah, I was really impressed by that game. Especially my sister doesn't play much. She plays like just Zelda and Animal Crossing anymore. But she was able to just hop right in and kind of go along with me.
So, Neil, do you have any... You have a brother, don't you?
Yeah. A lot of my memories with playing games with my brother and my sister were when I was way younger, because they're 5 and 7 years older than me. So that's kind of where a lot of, I guess, my basis for video gaming comes from, is playing with my brother, because he got a Sega Genesis with his own money. In, like, the early 90s, and that was kind of, like, the first console that was in the house when I was little. And then I had a cousin who had an NES that we would go over there and play that, and then eventually when that cousin got older and didn't care about the NES, he just gave it to us. So we played a lot of, like, sports games on Genesis and an NES, and a lot of Mario, a lot of Punch-Out. That's probably where a lot of my love for, you know, why I still play Madden year in and year out is a lot of because of the influence of my brother when I was younger. And now I've kind of paid back the favor that he did to me in getting me into video games when I was younger, because now I'm basically like, I'm the uncle that just feeds my niece straight video games constantly. Because basically whenever I have a game and I'm like, well, I'm done playing it, I will lend my copy of her kind of almost indefinitely. So, but I've been getting her into, you know, Disney Infinity, some of the, like, new Super Mario Brothers, 3D World, Mario Kart, and it's been kind of fun seeing her, like, kind of digest these games. But I guess for me, probably the more significant thing would be the whole playing with significant others part of this yep. discussion, because that's actually, like, how I met my wife. It was my freshman year of college, and I was wearing a Mario Brothers t-shirt, and she had a Super Nintendo with her, but no, she didn't have the right, like, I think, like, her roommate only brought, like, a TV that had an RF connection, and she only had, like, AV cables or something like that. So she pointed out my shirt and was just like, I've got an N64, but I can't hook it up. So then we ended up hanging out and playing Dr. Mario, GoldenEye, and Tetris Attack. It was Dr. Mario, Tetris Attack, and GoldenEye. And then that's kind of... That's where a lot of our relationship kind of blossomed out of there, was just that. And now, at this point, she just steals my Japanese 3DS and plays Picross. Only to emerge to play the occasional game of Fortune Street. She's kind of... I mean, she still plays games, and she has the knowledge because she listens to me blab on about them a lot. But she's not as involved with playing them now, but I occasionally get her to come out and play something. Usually it'll be like, I need to do it for the site. she'll be like, fine. But yeah.
Gosh, that origin story is adorable.
Yeah, aww. It's a cute one. I mean, the thing that makes it not cute is that she had a boyfriend when I met her.
Oops.
but that dude went away real fast. And now it's like, that was actually, we're coming up on, like, it's been almost exactly 9 years since that occurred.
Because
it was the first weekend of freshman year of college.
Well, you should get her an RF connector for your anniversary.
Oh. Well, no, I mean, like, we legit have our fourth wedding anniversary next week. And no, I don't think the fourth wedding anniversary is the RF connector anniversary. It's like flowers or something like that.
Oh, psh.
I'm not a bad husband. I just dealt with this like a week or two ago, And it's the fourth wedding anniversary is a really dumb wedding anniversary in the grand scheme of things, because it is, it's just like one of the things, like if you just like go to like, you know, like wedding.about.com, it's just like, here's a fun thing to do, watch your wedding video. And it's like, no, like that's not a fun thing to do. That's really boring. Like a lot of talking, just people walking down an aisle, like.
Yeah, who needs that? We just need some GoldenEye and you
yeah,
set.
Yeah, there just some GoldenEye, man. GoldenEye and a wedding dress. Like,
much
that's
better.
It.
So Becky, have you got any stories? What's your history?
Oh, well, I grew up for a long time as the youngest of three girls. But I'll let you know, that didn't stop us. All of us still play video games religiously to this day.
I say that's a lie, because, you know, we all know that girls didn't play video games
back
in the
90s. We actually, my sisters did me the service of killing our NES before I actually really had the motor skills to use it. So I didn't really get to play Mario for a long time when I was a kid. Or I say a long time, but I really mean until I was like six.
did you just stare longingly at the cartridge?
Yeah, well, then we ended up giving them to my uncle's family because they had a Super NES, and we didn't get to see them until we finally moved back up to Washington, because they lived in Washington and we lived in California. And then when we finally moved back up there, we got to go over there quite a bit, and so I got to play the Super NES. And I just remember, you know, staring at it going, this isn't my Sega Genesis, where's my Sonic games? Like, just going, I don't understand this. And obviously being really bad at video games, because for a long time I just rode on my sister's coattails. You know, they were older and smarter. So, you know, we'd play Sonic the Hedgehog and I'd always get stuck on tails because my sisters were like, you could die. It was no consequence. So you just stay over there and have that controller. Which is funny because it ended up actually kind of like working out, because I got one like old Sonic combo pack thing for the PlayStation 2 years later from one of my older sisters, and I am like single-handedly the best sidekick in that game. Like, I can kill everything and I'm an invincible badass because I just played it all the time. But
yeah, it's funny because it's I did that with we have a family friend that's 2 years younger than me, and when back in the day would play Sonic when he was over and stuff, and I would make him be Tails because he wasn't very good, but then, you know, we worked out that he was like, it was way better because once he got sort of a bit more competent, he could just take out Robotnik, like,
yeah, you know, and Sonic could just hide out.
Exactly, it got
yeah,
to the point.
I just had to dodge anything, and like he would just go and beat the guy. So
exactly, my sisters would. They did. They eventually got to that point where they'd just like stand in the middle of the stage and go, Becky, sick it.
Go.
Like, yes! But, and then, like, really, the first couple of games we ever played on the Nintendo after that was, for me, it was Super Mario Brothers Duck Hunt, and Turtles, gosh, which one was it? Oh, Manhattan Project.
Was it the arcade game?
It was Manhattan Project.
Manhattan.
Yeah.
That's, I've never played that one. When I was younger, I think I still do, the first and the second one, but I never played Manhattan Project.
I really liked it, but again, I had terrible judgment as a six-year-old, so I don't know, it could have been good, could have been bad, but I just remember having, like, so much fun with it, and then obviously, you know, my fun gun for Duck Hunt, you know, I learned video game rage very early, shooting the Duck Hunt dog, and I just remember that, like, started me off from there, and then when my parents got divorced years later, and I ended up, basically, my family sort of turned into the Brady Bunch, because my stepdad had three kids, so it went from just having two older sisters, now I had five other siblings, and we became the best house on the block because we had two Nintendo 64s. My sister had gotten one for her birthday, and then my stepbrother had one as well. And he had the whole the football and sports side of the spectrum, and we had, like, you know, Mario Party, and my sister had the original Smash Bros.
Oh, that's awesome.
And Mario Kart 64, and Zelda. That was my Zelda. Ocarina of Time was my first Zelda game ever, and that's now a lifelong addiction.
Me too.
Yep. Same here.
Yeah.
Although I had attempted to play like Zelda 1 and Zelda 2, and it didn't really go that well. Those games, when you're like 8 years old, those games can be very daunting. Especially when you're like, well, there's a 3D system out.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, oh, I don't know, this looks weird.
But you're talking about the early NES games that you played do remind me of their, like, outside of, like, Mario Brothers, when I would go over to my cousins and play NES, there were three games that I remember very vividly. Silent Service, which is, like, this weird submarine game. Hmm. Blaster Master was a game that he had, and my brother, my sister, and my cousin, we would all kind of try to get through that game, and for people who have tried to play Blaster Master, that game's really hard. We never get very far in it, and I actually did go back to it when it came out on Virtual Console on the Wii and beat it, and it was, like, the first time I saw the second half of that game, and it was incredible. And then the other game was Anticipation, which is a game that I'm upset isn't on Rare Replay, because it's, like, the dumbest game in the world. It's by Rare, and it's basically Pictionary, but, like, there's, like, the computer will start to draw things, and it's, like, connect the dots, but then, like, later on higher difficulties, the dots are more spread out, so it's harder to guess, and you have to guess these different things using the NES controller to, like, you know, go through and sort through, and it's that kind of finicky crap where it's like, if there's, like, shoes and you put shoe, or if it's, like, shoes and you only put shoe, then you won't get it.
Oh.
And then, like, some of the, like, I think there's, like, a high heel and a teddy bear are, like, the player icons that you can use. Anticipation's a really dumb game, and I love it.
Yeah, one of my other favorite games that I remember with my sisters playing them very early on was actually a PC game, because my mom picked it up for, like, you know, $5 out of some bin in a grocery store, and it was Hugo's House of Horrors, which is an old DOS game. And I just remember, like, us trying to figure that, like, you know, we were so used to things that, you know, for the most part, we were pretty good at figuring out where you're supposed to go. Everything had a very linear track, and, you know, it was just, you killed monsters, that was the whole thing. Well, in this game, you had to figure out exactly how to use all of the items that you got. You know, all your commands were very specific. You couldn't say, like, put steak down, you had to say, like, throw steak at dog, or something like that. It was just like, and I know I remember years later, Kim and I actually turned around in college, we were talking about it, I think it was my junior year, her senior year or something, and she was like, oh my god, I remember that game! I was like, yeah, my sisters and I just, we couldn't do it. It, like, for half the time, we were just dying over and over and over again because we couldn't figure out the right command prompt. And she's like, yeah, I remember that game. And we Wikipedia'd it and found out that it had two sequels. And we downloaded a DOS emulator so that we could play the two sequels over the course of a long weekend. Just, oh yeah, that's what we did in college.
So, yeah, I like grew up with the Sega Mega Drive. We got it in, like, 93 or 94, I think, for Christmas. And I ended up getting Batman Returns, and my sister got Sonic the Hedgehog. But I was playing Sonic the Hedgehog most of the time. And, you know, my sister, growing up, she wanted to play games, but whenever she did, she just got frustrated and angry at it, more so. She didn't have the patience for it, so, like, she'd try and play Sonic, you know, and if she died a few times, she'd just be like, I don't want to play. So she, you know, we didn't really play together that much, because it was so, ended up becoming so one-sided, and we didn't have that many two-player games for a long time. And by the time the 64 rolled around, you know, we didn't really play that much stuff together. I didn't end up getting, like, most of the multiplayer games, like Mario Kart 64 and that, because my friend, we had it, so I couldn't afford to buy it, just go and buy it. So, you know, it wasn't until later on, like, during the Wii generation, that we started, like, ended up playing together a bit more, and she was, like, more open to playing video games and stuff. I bought her a Nintendo DS, and you know, she got hooked on that for a while, so that was pretty good. But yeah, we didn't feel like really played together a whole lot, like, video game wise. But yeah, even during the Nintendo DS stuff, it was mainly me buying games for her, or recommending some games. Like, I ended up buying a, like, I know these games get a bad reputation, but a couple of them are actually, like, at least average or decent enough to not be insulting. And that was, the, like, Imagine Ice Skating. Yeah, yeah. Like, there's Ubisoft games, right? So I get a couple of those, and she became addicted to, like, the figure skating one and beat it, like, 4 or 5 times, like, in a row. And same with Mario Party DS. She played Mario Party DS by herself.
Oh, God.
And, like, played every board just beat, with, like, every character.
Beat the pulp out of the CPs.
Why. I think we played multiplayer on that a couple times, but I don't really... Yeah. So she became addicted for a little while there, and like more recently, like since the Wii U, with like whenever she's been over and stuff, she's always like, "Oh, well, let's play Nintendo Land, let's play like Mario Party on the 64 or that sort of thing." So, like, it's pretty fun, like these days getting together and playing multiplayer games. All right, so we'll take another short break, and we'll be back with our memories about gaming magazines.
Yay!
Yay!
Okay, welcome back. We are back for our final segment today, which is gaming magazines and how we used to, you know, memories or how we used to relate to them, or what are our thoughts on gaming magazines now. So, Neil, do you want to kick off with this? Or what's your history with magazines?
I write for one.
The present day. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess my history. I had a Nintendo Power subscription when I was younger. Then I had an EGM subscription, like, late 90s is when I started. Or maybe it was... might have been, like, the year 2000 is when I had an EGM subscription, and I had that for, like, 4 or 5 years. And just really enjoyed reading that. And then I kind of got into a habit. I didn't have a subscription as I got, like, to the mid-2000s at a lot of magazines, but whenever I would, like, go on a plane or go traveling of any sort, it would be kind of, like, almost a tradition to go and, like, buy, like, the latest EGM or the latest, like, Game Pro or Nintendo Power. I just kind of have that as reading material, and that's something that, like, feels hollow whenever I travel now, because the only option is, like, Xbox, the magazine, or whatever, because everything's dead. But... And then, I mean, now, I mean, most of those magazines are all dead. I guess all that's left from, like, the old guard, it's EGM in its weird reborn state, and Game Informer. And then you have, you know, us fun crowdfunding dandies over at Nintendo Force, or NF Magazine, that I've been writing for since its inception just about 2 years ago. And that's kind of a different beast, because it's still kind of, it's a little more, like, I guess, like, shoestring than a lot of those magazines were. Because, like, I mean, EGM, back in the day, that was a full-time job for everybody present. For Nintendo Force, it is a side gig for pretty much everybody involved. With the exception of Lucas Thomas, the guy who runs it, who I think it's a little more his full-time gig. But for most of us, I mean, we're bi-monthly, and I run this site and I have a full-time job and then I do Nintendo 4 stuff. Like, it's just kind of, I don't know, it's sad what's happened to gaming magazines. But it's, I mean, it's just print in general is kind of, there's not as much of a space for it anymore.
Especially on, like, the news front, it's not really, like, having a news section in a like, gaming magazine now is just sort of pointless, really.
It's more of, like, a way to, like, chronicle what happened.
Yeah, I was going to sort of say that. It is a good way to sort of have, like, that snapshot of what was happening, you know, that month or whatever.
Yeah, and, like, I mean, the challenge with a lot of gaming magazine stuff, and I still don't see a lot of the ones that are out there now doing it, is, and I guess maybe that means it's not successful, but, like, making it more evergreen. Like, instead of having scored reviews in every issue, like, do something where, like, because you're not going to be first to print, like, having a gaming magazine, like, you're... You know, for example, Nintendo Force, Mario Maker reviews went up in the beginning of September. I think our next issue isn't going to be out until the end of September. So we're going to have a Mario Maker review in that from other people other than me. But it's going to be a month late. Like, the game will have already been in stores before that review goes out. And to me, there's kind of that more interesting thing that you could do, which is more... take in more of the feedback that happened from that game post-launch before, and instead of just having, here's our thoughts and a score 3 weeks later than everyone else.
Yeah. Have you guys ever checked out the UK gaming magazine Retro Gamer?
I've read it a couple times. Like, there are some bookstores near me, like Barnes & Noble will occasionally cover that, and I'll thumb through it.
They do a pretty good job at being sort of, you know, that more evergreen thing with features, and, you know, they talk about, they basically talk about old games anyway, so, you know, it doesn't really matter. They don't have to be timely a whole lot, but they do throw in some, like, more modern stuff as well. I don't buy it all the time because it's, like, $20 to buy in the newsagents here because it's imported.
It's the same thing here.
Yeah, yeah. But it is good. I like buying their ones that are more like I got one that sort of chronicles like a whole bunch of different systems and like information, and they even have like dedicated like feature book sort of things for like one system or two. Like there's one I saw the other day which was like Master System /NES, and sort of you have to turn the book over to get, you know, it's like half the book each, and then either side is like the NES one, and then you turn it over and then it's like the Master System one. So that was kind of cool. I was going to go back in time and sort of start where, like, when I started buying magazines, and that was like in the late 90s or early 2000 maybe. I started buying a magazine called N64 Gamer, which is like an unofficial sort of publication, and it eventually went on to turn into Nintendo Gamer once the GameCube was about to launch, I think. And that was a really good magazine. Only lasted like 23 issues though, because I guess the GameCube, they weren't selling enough magazines, so they killed it. But like the N64 Gamer was kind of like, because it was unofficial, they could be a bit more like loose with sort of appealing just directly to children, or sort of, you know, they threw in slightly more mature jokes, you know, juvenile sort of mature jokes and stuff like that. And a lot of the fan art was like console war stuff with like Pikachu shooting Sonic with a machine gun and sort of really that sort of thing. But, you know, the magazine at the time, because I never had really followed, I was only just starting to follow news and reviews and stuff. So it was fun to do that and to like sort of read a review on Majora's Mask or something. I used to like just basically get a magazine, and that night I would just like lay in bed and read it like cover to cover, and then maybe go back throughout the week and reread it and stuff. Like, I couldn't do that today. It's like, I don't know. When I go get a magazine, I don't read every article or every piece of writing now. I don't know.
But I mean, it's kind of, I feel like that's more representative of what the kind of just our, how we digest content in this modern age compared to how we did it 15, 20 years ago is that we take things in more and more piecemeal than we do all at once. Like, I know that's definitely when I kind of just read articles on the internet. It's not like I'm like, all right, I'm going to read everything that this site posted this week. Like, it'll be like, okay, there's an article there. That seems fun. Okay, maybe I'll come back. Okay, yeah, there's another article there.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, when I was doing Powered Off for NWR, the Nintendo Gamer magazine and stuff was sort of like the template I wanted to aim for, to get towards eventually. Just like, maybe, you know, how I threw in stuff like staff profiles and stuff like that. That was sort of to sort of mimic the sort of format that I liked reading back in the day and stuff. Now, I've actually pulled up, because a few months ago, I actually bought a whole bunch of, like, earlier N64 gamer magazines. So I've just pulled up issue 7 from 1998 right now. And just going to have a quick flip through and see if I can find something to read into you guys. So if anyone else wants to jump in and have a chat about their stuff, do it now. Adam, how about you?
Okay. Well, when I was a child, every couple months, I would get a Nintendo Power, and I'd be really excited about it, and I would just love it and read the whole thing. And then when I think it was the issue that the GameCube launched, it was like 150, I started buying every single issue. And at some point, it just came into my mind. I would tell people, when I grow up, I want to write for Nintendo Power. And I continued buying every issue, and every time I would buy one, I would sit down and read the whole thing cover to cover, and then put it on my shelf. And I still have them all, but I never, like, subscribed for some reason. I would just go to the store
every month.
You
got fleeced of money, man. You got fleeced. Gosh. You would save so much money if you... And that's kind of why like, I was getting to the point where, I mean, I was talking about how I would go when I was traveling and I'd buy issues, and I realized how much money I could save when I'd subscribe. So for the last couple months, or the last, like, year or two of Nintendo Power, I actually did subscribe to it, because you, like, it's, like, half price.
Yeah, I always remember it was a lot cheaper, but I was a child, so I didn't have, like, checks or anything.
Yeah, no, that happened to me, too. That was my excuse as well.
I could walk to the grocery store and buy one. And I continued doing that forever. I think I have almost every issue. I'm missing like 4. But one day, like 10, 12 years later or whatever, I saw an article. It was like a rumor saying Nintendo Power was closing. And I was like, what? No, this can't be possible. And then I realized that I had missed an issue.
It's all your fault.
I know. Oh, I was like, no.
You destroyed the magazine.
Adam doesn't care anymore. So I called Nintendo, and I was like, are you closing Nintendo Power? And they were like, no, we're totally not. Like, it was between when the rumor came out and when they officially announced it. It was like 2 days. So I, like, subscribed right then. I was like, well, I want it. I need to subscribe forever. And then they ended up closing it, and I was really sad, but I have 3 copies of the final issue. I have one that I opened and read, and then I have a sealed store issue and a sealed subscriber issue. And I do subscribe now to Nintendo Force. And Neil, when you were talking about that, I didn't know you wrote for Nintendo Force. I was like freaking out.
You can see my big. You can see my big dumb me. Like, on the back of every issue, man.
Oh, my God.
I'm actually, my review of LBX will be in the next issue of Nintendo Force. I need to write that by the end of this week.
I'm holding the March-April one right here. And you're not on the back. I don't see you here, man. You're a liar.
What's on the cover of that one? I'm trying to think of that.
Mario Party and Codename Steam. Oh, my God, I forgot about Codename Steam. I forgot that game even existed.
I'm trying to think. That might have been the month where I didn't write that much. But I forget. I know, like, last month I wrote the review for Adventures of Pip. I did, like, a big article in Luigi's Mansion in the first issue. And really? I reviewed 3D World. for Nintendo Force. I might have Etrian Mystery Dungeon might be, I might have written the review for that in that issue. Maybe.
Okay.
Or that might have I don't know.
I'm not gonna lie, I don't read it as deeply as I did Nintendo Power, but I do love it. Yeah. I love that it comes to my house. I also love that it's every other month, because Nintendo Power was getting a little overwhelming, that every month I'd have to sit down and, like, read paper. I was like, what? It seemed kind of backwards. But now every other month I can flip through a gaming magazine that isn't telling me about, like, a Call of Duty game that came out a month and a half ago.
Yeah, because, like, the origins of Nintendo First were that day that Nintendo Power, that the rumor was circulating, and it might have been when it got confirmed, and there was just an email thread going around. It was started by Lucas Thomas, who, he's been a longtime freelancer at IGN, and, like, it was, like, me, guys from Nintendo Life, guys from Go Nintendo, I think some dudes from Destructoid, like, just a whole, like, motley crew of, like, just Nintendo. The reason why we came up with Nintendo Force is that it was a force of Nintendo journalists coming together to try to keep that going in some capacity.
It's so beautiful. I love so poetic. It. I totally spent like $40 on the first issue because I never opened it. I read the digital one and I have it sealed. And then I remember there was like some subscriber bonus for like year two or year three or something where you could get a copy of the first issue, and I was so mad because I have my sealed super expensive first issue. That's pretty much what I read. Every once in a while I would grab something else, but I don't know, they would like throw in weird like kind of mature juvenile jokes, and it didn't seem as professional as Nintendo Power, which was just magical. Like, I don't even remember what else I read, but they were like magazines that you only ever saw once. I'd be like, oh, it's a new magazine, and I'd buy it and I wouldn't like it, and then I'd never see it again.
Well, that's like, what is it, there was that Best Buy magazine for, it ran for like a year or two, At Gamer. That was,
I remember that one.
That didn't last. That's done now. For at EGM they would have like, there was EGM, I think, what were all the offshoots, there was like Expert Gamer. I feel like there was like an EGM 2. And it's just because I think back then, like, just they had the advertising revenue for it. And I think GamePro might have had a side one. Like, that. I mean, that's, I wish I had, like, I'm sure there's a website out there that just has everything listed. I just don't know what it is.
Oh, I totally subscribe to Game Informer. Just because I'm friends with the dude at GameStop, and every year he's like, oh, you should renew your card. And I'm like, okay, whatever.
I tried to get the digital thing last year. Right now I think my GameStop card has expired. But, like, for some reason, no matter what I would do, I could never access the digital thing. And for me, it was always like, I mean, the reason why I even get the GameStop card is usually that, like, all right, I'm buying a bunch of used games, and it's basically paying for itself, and I get a free subscription to Game Informer. Great. And then I realized that I was basically just collecting issues of Game Informers to eventually recycle and throw out. So that's why I went digital, and now it's just like I never read it at all, where I think if I go back, I'll probably get a physical again, because at least then I would occasionally thumb through it.
Yeah, no, that's kind of what I do, because, I mean, like, at least, you know, now, obviously, all I really subscribe to is Game Informer, because it comes with my GameStop card.
Also, it's the only thing out there.
Exactly! I get the digital copies because for a while when I first got my GameStop card really and had it pretty regularly, I was still in college and I went to college in Vermont, but I lived in Tennessee. So I was like, well, I don't really want physical copies because I'm going to have to like switch my address every couple months, you know? So I was just like, yeah, I'll get digital copies. And to this day, I still find them just, that kind of just, like, pile up in my email, and then I'm like, oh, crap, the next one's out. I still haven't read the last one. I'm like, occasionally, like, I'll flip through their newsletter since I get the digital ones, and I'm like, oh, that's kind of interesting. But, like, I'll usually see, like, what's on the cover and maybe what's in the table of contents. And that's about as far as I get sometimes, because I'm just like, oh, no, that's okay. but I kind of wish I had the physical ones just because I feel like I'd definitely read them more just because it would feel like it would sit there and stare at me from my counter instead of just like I can forget about it in my email because it gets buried under everything else. But yeah, no, I mean, I miss the days of when I never subscribed to Nintendo Power either. Partially just because, again, youngest of six kids at one point, or second youngest of six kids at one point, we didn't get a lot of special things that weren't free. Because it was like, my parents were always like, well, if we get you a magazine subscription, we have to essentially offer it to all five of the others. So I really only ever got to read it when I happened to see somebody else who had a copy, or just, you know, something, somebody like a, you know, dentist's office maybe had one lying around, which never happened. And I would get to pick it up, and I got so excited because I was like, oh my god, I get to read a gaming magazine. All of this news is old, but I don't care because it's interesting. And 90% of it I don't know anyway. So I just remember getting super excited about stuff like, you know, contests, and then I'd be like, oh, except this issue's like 8 months old, so the contest is long over. So that always made me the saddest kid in the world. But I always appreciated getting to actually, like, you know, really see the news in one, you know, nice copy of a magazine. But I can see why that kind of form of publication has gone downhill with the fact that, you know, online journalism is so competitive, you know, with things being out 5 seconds after they release, and magazines just can't keep up with that when they're publishing, you know, even, you know, once a month. They couldn't even do it if they were publishing once a week. So, like you were saying, Neil, evergreen content is where it's at for magazines, and if they don't have it, they just can't make it. So that's the reason we've seen so many go under. And it's sad. I mean, we mourn the days of the Nintendo Power.
Yeah. And I guess, I really wish that Nintendo kind of brought it back in some capacity.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like the concept of the Nintendo Direct kind of replaced it. But even that, I mean, in a post-Iwata world, you know, RIP, what do you do with Nintendo Directs? And I feel like if you don't have Nintendo Directs, you need to have something like that, because after Nintendo Power, like, I feel like they didn't really connect with their fans again until they started doing the Treehouse Lives and the Nintendo Directs. And that's when they kind of got that feeling that they had with Nintendo Power back then, but, you know, for 2015.
And one thing that I feel like was a huge missed opportunity was I would buy everything that Nintendo Power told me to. If somebody was really rude, I'd be like, oh, I'm going to buy that. And I never understood why Nintendo didn't, like, offer a year of Nintendo Power when you bought new hardware. Like, you get your kid a Wii, if he's, like, 6, 8, he's not going to know what's out there. But if you send him Nintendo Power every month, he's going to know, like, oh, hey, mom, buy me all these games in this magazine. It's the gift that just keeps giving money to Nintendo.
Yeah.
Yep.
I don't know. I always thought they should have done that, but it's too late now.
Yeah, kind of.
Because when the Wii took off here, a bunch of Nintendo magazines got sort of reinstated over here, because, you know, oh, we can make might be able to make some money off Nintendo fans again. So Nintendo Gamer came back for 4 issues.
<Woo-hoo>.
And Nintendo also launched an official magazine here, the official Australian Nintendo magazine, and I bought a few issues of that, but I don't know, it was just something about it that was just like, so, you know, there's less to me from what I read. It was like, seemed to be less personality with, like, amongst the staff, and sort of they obviously wouldn't have had as much freedom just to sort of like do more weird things or express like themselves with sort of, you know, even off some slightly off color language and stuff like that. Like, that was the thing that, like, kept me reading a lot of the magazines that I used to, like, early, back in the day. It was, like, the staff members tried to sort of imbue, like, a personality onto sort of their names and stuff. Even though it was probably sort of fake and, like, exaggerated, it gave the the magazine some sort of some color to it. You know, instead of having everything so clean cut and sort of just straight to the point sort of thing. So I have flipped through the magazine that I had in my hands, and I thought it might be fun just to have a look at the news news section from 98. Ooh. So let's have a little look in what was happening back then. Apparently, a game called Death Cars was coming out at some point.
Death Cars?
Death Cars is being programmed by Beam Software, who reside in Melbourne, and are responsible for the recent PC hit Crush, Kill, and Destroy. So they're an Australian developer. I guess the game never came out.
Wow. Sounds super child-friendly.
All right. I'm going to be right back. I can see a stack of Nintendo Powers. I'm going to pull a random one out. And then we'll have more reading time.
This is going
to
be fun.
So that's interesting. There's a... Yeah, I have to look into that. Whatever happened to Death Cars with a Z?
Just like a
the next,
you
the,
wiki
next
that.
The next news story is all about Duke Nukem. Ooh. Duke set to slam Lara on the N64. I don't know about that. He did come out. After that, there is a news story about a device that you can plug your N64 into to hook it up to a PC monitor to get, you know, that cleaner, cleaner visuals and a better monitor for gaming and stuff, which is kind of weird.
All right, I've got cumbersome. Nintendo Power Volume 48 from May 1993.
Oh dear!
It's got Batman Returns on the cover. There's also a call out for Zelda Link's Awakening.
Oh my
Game
god!
Boy preview. Some of the games in here: Zen Intergalactic Ninja, The Lost Vikings, Shadowrun, Kirby's Adventure on the NES, Super Turrican. Yeah, this is very old. A lot of stuff on Lost Vikings. That was a great game. And most of this is just like strategies.
I've also got an issue from April 2000, and in this one they had a feature, the 100 best Nintendo games of the century.
Oh wow! What was number one?
And the top 10 are as follows: Super Mario Kart, Worms Armageddon for the N64.
Wow.
Pokemon Game Boy, Donkey Kong Arcade, Super Mario Bros. For the NES, Tetris for Game Boy, Street Fighter 2 Turbo for the Super NES, Mario 64 for the N64, Ocarina of Time for the 64.
I knew that one was going to be on there.
What do you guys think number one is?
Link to the Past?
Nope. Mm. GoldenEye.
GoldenEye.
Yeah.
Aww.
This magazine had a pretty strong GoldenEye fan base at the time.
All right, here's the Nintendo Power Awards from 1992. The Nesters. Best overall Super Nintendo game. Number three, Super Mario Kart. Ooh. Number two, Link to the Past, which, yes, that's why
yes,
I said Link to
yeah.
the Past when you were going
through
it. And
like,
number
one,
Street Fighter II The World Warrior. Trumping Link to the Past.
Wow.
Wow.
Well-deserved, well-deserved.
On Game Boy, number three is Kirby's Dream Land. Number two is Mega Man 2. And number one is Super Mario Land 2. I can't disagree with that. And they even have the NES, which this ties in. Number three is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 3 The Manhattan Project.
Ha 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 ha!
Number two
so
is Dragon Warrior
awesome.
4. I forgot that Dragon Warrior 4 even came out, or Dragon Quest 4, rather, came out on NES in America, because I only played the Super Nintendo version, which is fantastic, or the DS version of Dragon Quest 4. And then number one was Mega Man 4.
Good choice.
Yeah, I pulled a random issue. I have 165, which... Oh, I don't know where this is, when this is from. But in it, it has the power charts, and the top three selling games were for GameCube were Metroid Prime, Mario Party 4, and Super Mario Sunshine. And it has the first in-depth look of Wind Waker, Pokemon Ruby and Sapphire, and the Game Boy Advance SP. But the coolest thing is that it has a super awesome Metroid Prime comic in it. Just right in the middle. It's so awesome. There's no talking. It's just like explosions and shooting things. Crap.
Got the Star Fox comic in this one.
It's so cool. Really? Oh, really?
Yeah.
And those are so cool. They were just randomly in the middle of the issue. It'd just be like, here's a comic.
Here you go. All
right, I'm taking a picture of this Star Fox stuff. I think this is what you call off the rails.
The Mario Party e-reader game. I have this.
Dude, I found it recently. I'm going to bust it out with friends at some point. Oh my God. That game's awesome.
So good. Oh, yeah.
Okay, seeing as how this has devolved into us flipping through magazines and reading random stuff.
And being like, oh my God, this is so cool.
Let's maybe wrap up this segment and the episode. Thanks, guys, for jumping in and chatting about some random stuff today. And if you would like to email Connectivity, you can do that by sending an email to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. You can rate us on iTunes. That'd be good as well. And you can follow all of us on Twitter. I'm at NicholasNWR.
I'm at Enron10.
I'm at... Do you want to go first?
I'm at AdventureBuddy01, and A is the only vowel in adventure.
And I'm at BH Dangerface. That's me.
Also, just wanted to mention, I'm thinking of starting up an official Connectivity Twitter account soon, with the help of Adam here, most likely. So hopefully we'll have that ready to go fairly soon, maybe even before this episode goes live. And that'll be a good way, I think, for people to just be able to directly chat to Connectivity or throw questions to us for listener mail and anything like that. So keep a lookout for that. And thanks again, everyone, for joining me. And until next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Keep